Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by, and welcome to the half-year results for 2013 conference call. At this time, all phone participants are in a listen-only mode. There will be a presentation followed by a question-and-answer session. For those participants on the conference call, if you wish to ask a question, you will need to press star, then one on your telephone. I must advise you that this conference is being recorded today, Thursday, the 21st of February, 2013. I would now like to hand the conference over to your first speaker today, the CEO of Echo Entertainment, John Redmond. Thank you. Please go ahead.
Thank you, operator. Welcome, everyone, to the first half of 2013 results call. This is my first call as the CEO of Echo. With me here in the meeting today is Matt Bekier, who, of course, all of you have listened to for years now. And you can identify me, I guess. I'll be the one with the accent on the phone call. Turning to slide four, we're reporting NPAT of $66.5 million for the half after taking into account the significant items. The decline was primarily impacted by a higher effective tax rate in the first half relative to last year. Of course, the company declared a dividend of $0.04 per share in line with our target payout ratio. We saw some different trends across the properties in the half, with the Star experiencing growth, impressive growth, and the Queensland properties showing some softer performance. But it is worth pointing out upfront that we are expanding our cost optimization programs. There'll be, of course, doubling the targeted cost savings across the group to over $60 million. I think one of the things that I spoke about early on in my first comments that we were going to be focused on was the operating efficiencies. I think the magnitude of the number we're talking about today demonstrates that we did focus on that, and we moved quickly into that area. These initiatives, of course, were being implemented in a matter of months. Everything will, for the most part, be completed by the end of the financial year. The key drivers, going to slide five, key drivers of the first half results: revenue growth at the Star, up an impressive $76.3 million on a normalized basis, or 13.6%. That was offset by some weakness in the Queensland market. Gaming taxes and commissions, up approximately $38 million, reflecting the revenue growth, of course, at the Star and a solid growth in our VIP business. This was also impacted by the base tax rate increasing by 1%, which accounts for about $4 million. The Queensland costs were well controlled. Of course, they benefited from the cost optimization programs that were previously announced in prior periods. The $9.8 million of significant items relates to redundancies that were associated with cost-out programs, which we'll talk more about in detail. But those were also the result of previously announced programs. Moving to slide six, of course, the opening of the event center in January puts the exclamation point, if you will, on the completion of Project Star. It was completed on time and on budget, and it's transformed that property into a world-class resort. We're very excited about the results. Slide seven, again, most of you are aware of the accolades and awards that are out there regarding the various restaurants, hotel additions that have happened at the property. We're extremely proud of all these rewards or awards and rewards. And you can see the impact that they have all had on the operations of our property. Moving to slide eight, that provides some operational benchmarks, which I think you'll find useful in analyzing the business. Won't go into those in any detail, but I did want to draw your attention to the MTGM revenue, a solid performance at the Star, driven, of course, by expanding the product base. But arguably, that has had some cannibalization impact on our slot business. Table games revenue was growing impressively across all of our properties. We continue to improve the operating efficiency of our table games by, of course, driving the betting limits higher and optimizing the hours of operation, which is extremely critical when you look at our high labor costs. So between evaluating our bet spread and our betting limits, we've had some great success in driving table games revenue, and that'll continue to happen going forward. The hotel occupancy was high on a comp cash mix. Of course, we're looking to drive the yield through a stronger cash demand and de-emphasizing the third-party channels. The EBITDA margin, not at the level we expect, but we'll talk more about that with our cost-saving initiatives planned to bring these margins back to a level that we find more acceptable. Moving to slide nine, the STAR. Overall, solid revenue growth, up 15% on an actual basis, with impressive growth across most of our lines of business, with the exception of slots. Slide 10, revenue performance. Of course, the visitation metric, showing more people coming into the property, and this increased visitation is starting to flow through to our table games, with a growth of 9.3% for the half. Very solid result. Looking at the chart in the middle of the page, you can see the growth for the second quarter of 13 for table games somewhat moderated, but that's comparing to a period that benefited from opening activity, and we'd also launched a new Baccarat MTGM product in late September. Again, that's been extremely successful, but it's had some cannibalization on our physical table game segment. The non-gaming revenue is performing well with limited cannibalization of existing areas, and the new areas, of course, continue to gain momentum, which has been very impressive. Slide 11, our VIP business continues to impress with front money up 27% on the PCP. The momentum is building consistently with growth now at 35% per annum over the last 4 years. Very impressive. Outlook for the VIP business remains extremely positive now that we have, of course, our six-star product and all the other amenities that are in the building as part of the Project STAR renovation. I think the growth in that business is a affirmation as to the quality and success of the $870 million spend at the property. Slide 12, slots at the STAR. The momentum here is moderated after 3 years of very strong growth. The effectiveness of our marketing programs are not where we want them. We'll be talking about that in much greater detail as we go forward, but we will be revamping those programs so they're much more aspirational, if you will, as opposed to the behavior conditioning approach that these programs have today. So with that revamp, which I would expect to start to happen before the end of the financial year, we hope to see our slot growth change from a moderation to an acceleration into 14. Moving to slide 13, the Queensland revenue, of course, we've seen some softening across all of our major lines of business here in Queensland. The second part, or Q2 of 13 compared to Q1, particularly in slots, did pretty well. But again, this is a problem where we have constraints with the size of the product there. We've been wanting to build for some time in Queensland. We'll be talking about that a little bit more down the road. But the capacity constraints here continue to create a problem with the Treasury property and, of course, with Gold Coast, with the lack of investment, and we'll, again, be talking about that going forward. Matt, I'll turn it over to you to talk about the financials.
Great. Thank you, John, and good morning, everybody. Let me quickly move through the numbers. I refer you to page 15 of the presentation. Starting from the top, John has referenced some of these things already. Revenue is up 7%. That translates into a variable contribution after taxes and commission of 4%. The main two drivers here are Star. In Star, we are continuing to experience a creep in the tax rate. You may recall, and we've got the table in the appendix, that this year is the last year where the base rate for taxes goes up. As a result, the tax rate for gaming tax in Sydney is now at 28.3%, up from 27.8% last year. The second driver there are the IRB commissions. The commission levels stayed essentially flat over that period. That wasn't really a major contributor other than through mix. Expenses are up by 6.8%. We'll talk about those in a minute. Main driver there really is the expansion at Star, both in terms of the run rate for the new facilities in the first half, as well as additional facilities that we've opened and the volume growth in labor-intensive areas such as food and beverage. Going down the line, EBIT stands at 143.8, statutory EBIT up 3.7%. The significant items that John referenced, they relate entirely to redundancy costs that we incurred in the first half. We should also mention that we are planning to take a charge for an additional 15 million dollars in the second half, also related to restructuring costs as we expand the cost reduction program. Net interest stayed essentially flat. That's maybe a little bit of a surprise because we've repaid a lot of the bank debt, and because the base rates have come down. You may recall that we're basically 100% hedged, so we didn't benefit from the lower rates. What is also impacting the number here is that the lower interest charge from the lower drawdowns are offset by lower capitalized interest. The last period, still a lot of construction going on. We capitalized about 10 million dollars of interest. In this half, it was only 5 million dollars. There will be no capitalized interest going forward. The tax rate is basically a normalized 30% for the half, which gets us to the NPAT of 66.5 million dollars. Let me just touch on two issues that inform how this P&L looks and will evolve. The first one is set out on page number 16, on the following page, where we talk about the cost reduction program, page 16. You see there that we estimate that the program that we launched almost 12 months ago contributed savings of about 14 million dollars in the first half. We estimate that the run rate of savings that are underway and the additional savings that we've dialed in the first half will get us above 30 million dollars on a like-for-like basis in the second half. John mentioned that we have aggressively expanded the scope of the cost reduction program and now target additional savings that should get us north of 60 million dollars. The bulk of these savings relates to restructuring people, basically redundancies, and the reduction in labor. Most of the work will be done by the end of March. We've identified the specific areas, and we are in the middle of talking to the affected staff members as we speak. The bulk of everything will be completed this financial year, which should set us up well for 2014 and give us the full run rate benefit of these restructurings. We also want to draw a line under all the redundancies at some point and the significant items. This should be the last one of these charges coming through. The second aspect I want to touch on is on page number 17, and that relates to the VIP business. As John said, the VIP business has had another terrific period. Front money's up 28%. The win rate was slightly positive, just above our normalization. That contributed about 3.8 million dollars. The win rate effect contributed about 3.8 million dollars to the results. It wasn't material, and was a bit down from last period. I think the most pleasing thing is that we grew the business, and we didn't blow out in terms of bad debt or anything else. The bad and doubtful debt expense is 3.8%. That's sort of in line with where we like to run the business, and our experience has been at about 3.5%. And I think that reflects the quality of the credit processes that we have now established as a result of the experiences over the last 12 months. The good performance in the IRB also comes through when you look at the cash collection ratio, which we added in the appendix to this document. You see that the cash conversion is about 87% for the first half, which is up from last year. That basically means that we collect a lot of cash that we book as revenue in the IRB business. Over the page 18, we turn to the balance sheet, and I just want to call out three things. First of all, cash and cash equivalents, that's come down. That's really as a result because last year we were in the middle, or sorry, 6 months ago, we were in the middle of the capital raise, and we had received the institutional component of the capital raise, and that was sitting in cash. And so that's why the cash balance is down. Receivables have come down significantly. Two drivers there. One is the most substantial one, is that we had the retail component booked as a receivable that was then since June obviously received. But also pleasingly, and it relates to the IRB business, trade receivables are down. So the net trade receivables are down $16 million at 113.9 now, which is terrific. So the VIP business has expanded, but our receivables are down. So that's good. We're happy with that. Further down on the balance sheet, you see that we have no more current interest-bearing liabilities, so we basically used the proceeds of the capital raise to pay back the $443 million that we had 6 months ago. Over the page, very briefly touching on the CapEx. CapEx for the first half stood at $92 million, with just over half relating to Project Star. There's a little bit of expense still coming through to clean up some stuff, but basically that project is now completed. You also see that the underlying CapEx continues to be well managed. Basically, until we have greater visibility of what we're going to do here in Queensland, you should not expect any material large-scale capital expenditure coming through. And for the full year, we expect that the CapEx number will be south of $200 million. Then the last point I want to touch on is the funding situation. On page 20, you see our facilities set up there. We have a maturity part of our banking syndicate, which is fully drawn, that matures in June June 2014. Then we have an undrawn facility of about the same size with the same banks, which is in 2016. We're obviously turning our minds now to what we do with the maturity in 2014 and how we refinance that. But I think the situation is pretty solid. We expect to incur interest charges of about $85 million for the full year. So that's about, you know, in the first half we had about 40, had the benefit of $5 million of capitalized interest. The second half will be around about $45 million. That's all I wanted to say about funding. Back to you, John.
Well, thank you, Matt. I'll draw your attention to slide 22, covering the Treasury Brisbane relocation. I've been here for approximately 7 weeks, I believe now, and I have been here in Brisbane or the Gold Coast every week since I've been here. This is an extremely important opportunity for the company to move beyond what is now the Treasury building. For years, that facility has been capacity constrained, and it makes all the sense to look at an alternative site. We have been in discussions with the Queensland government over a potential investment in Brisbane and the Gold Coast. We look at these two markets as a whole because their customer bases, of course, overlap. So, but we are excited to do something on a much more significant scale. But the level of investment, of course, is a function of the location and the concessions to be negotiated. Location being the most important issue, because one thing's for sure, you can't outspend a bad location. So we're spending a lot of time trying to find what the right location will be. But at the same time, we realize that land cost has to be a very important part of the equation, because you cannot impress a customer by the price that you pay for land. You can't create jobs by the price you pay, and you can't get long-term viability by the price you pay. So we're being very prudent about this. We look forward to being able to build a new facility here, and we like to get started as soon as possible. We've done a lot of homework. We're doing a lot more to understand the market in terms of what we would want to build, but it's not a one-size-fits-all. It's a very custom approach to what would make sense for Brisbane, and we look forward to those continued conversations. Looking on to key priorities going forward, of course, I mentioned about the operational efficiencies being one of the first things to deal with on the agenda. I think you can see that we've dealt with that aggressively and quickly. So we look forward to continuing to monitor that. I think there is opportunity still going forward, albeit minor. As Matt said, I don't think you're going to see anything significant in terms of restructuring going forward or redundancies going forward. But it's not something that that we stop looking at. The focus and attention will be on improving our slot business. We've been looking at this ever since day one. We realize that we need to revamp our slot programs. I think when you look at what has happened in the airline space, is probably one of the best examples of what we're looking at. It's something that's much more of an aspirational program as opposed to, as I mentioned before, a behavioral management program. So we're in the process of revamping our club. We've made some significant strides in doing that and would hope to relaunch that, as I said, before the end of the financial year. But we're kind of targeting probably in the April timeframe. And of course, last but not least, on the agenda is to continue to expand on the impressive results we've achieved to date with our VIP business. We're extremely happy with what's been going on there. Again, now is when you can start getting the leverage out of the property and investment that's taken place. We have the assets, whether it be planes or rooms, to go. And now it's just a matter of expanding on our relationships both with junkets and with individuals who can bring more business in. So we have a lot of homework to do, but we're very focused on what needs to get done. And with that, we'll turn it over to operator for some Q&A.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, please press star then one on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. You can cancel your request by pressing the pound or hash key. And your first question comes from Sasha Crean from CLSA. Please ask your question.
Hi, guys. I'm just after a bit of clarity in regards to the cost optimization program. You had $14 million out in the first half. It looks like another $16 million coming out in the second half. So what sort of costs number should we be looking for in terms of the STAR? I mean, you still had 13% cost growth in the first half despite the $14 million out.
Look, Sasha, I don't want to give you the precise number of what the cost will be because we are partially looking at really restructuring where the costs sit. So I want to give you an example. You know, we are going through the corporate office right now and we're taking costs out of the corporate office, push some of the costs back to the properties. At the same time, we're consolidating other functions. So until that lands, I don't want to give you a property-specific number, but we have to be in a position where by the end of this financial year, you see some of those cost savings fall through to the bottom line because, we need to have them fully implemented before 2014.
Yeah. And your trading update suggests that the mass growth isn't that strong so far in second half of 13. I mean, VIP is obviously a much lower margin business. What's happening with commission rates in VIP this year relative to last year?
They're flat. They're absolutely flat.
So there'll be no change in the contribution or the growth of those relative to the gross revenue growth?
We see no. We don't. I mean, we're seeing a huge Chinese New Year. We're having a huge Chinese New Year. And we've not changed our commission rates at all.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
Your next question comes from Mark Christiansen from Morgan Stanley. Please ask your question.
Hi, good morning. Can I just ask a question on Brisbane? And I guess there's still a lot to be decided, but what do you see is the right mix of the business in Brisbane from a potential point of view? You know, has it got the potential to be a larger VIP destination with the right property, or would you consider Sydney to still be your main focus there? Just to get an idea, I guess, of what are the profit drivers that might actually generate the return? Is it going to be mainly a domestic business, or do you think you can actually upscale VIP in Brisbane too?
I think when you look at it, I mean, Sydney will always be the main location for all of VIP business. Brisbane, by upgrading the product, there's no doubt you'll get some people who want to look at the property as a second or third trip after they leave Sydney, whether they go to the Gold Coast or go to Brisbane. But substantially, all of the VIP business will always be in Sydney. But having that upgraded property gives us an opportunity to get an extra trip out of a lot of customers, there's no doubt.
So I take it from that, and that makes sense. I take it from that answer, though. If you're looking to spend a large sum up there, you'll to generate the return on that, you'll be largely relying on a larger uplift from the domestic crowd as opposed to sort of opening a big new VIP opportunity?
Most definitely. You're looking at expanding the business that is not volatile helps us, frankly, to deal much more effectively with the volatility from the VIP side. So we're looking at Brisbane as being a property that's going to be similar to the Star, excluding VIP. So it'd be very predictable in terms of its returns. And to the extent that there is a trip, it would be an isolated trip as opposed to a business focus.
Sure, I understand. Thank you.
Your next question comes from Michael Goltzman from Citi. Please ask your question.
Hi, morning, guys. Just wanted to switch focus a little bit to the event center. Can you talk about, I suppose, how we should be thinking about this going forward now that it's up and running? I mean, what kind of run rate are you expecting in terms of revenue and earnings contribution for this business?
Well, it's too early to say on that. I think I've, of course, only been here 6 to 7 weeks. It is a focus to look at how we want to leverage that venue. I think when you look at any of these event center type venues, historically, they're not looked at as being a profit center. They're looked at as being a traffic generator. So even on those facilities, if they were a break-even on a standalone basis, you're looking at all the traffic that they generate inside the building, which then creates, you know, gaming spend opportunity, food and beverage, hotel spend. So I would think that's the way that we would look at that facility going forward would
that's,
be just like
right
that.
The way I was looking at it as well, what I was trying to get at is how many forward bookings have you already organized for the event center? How should we be thinking about the visitation uplift at the moment?
Well, there's several opportunities for using the event center, all of which are obvious to all, but one, frankly, that the facility has been used for to a limited extent has been for significant size banquet functions. So that's not what it was designed to be used for, but it's a great piece of business to have to fill in all the gaps between significant entertainment offerings in the building. So the more days of utilization, again, when you look at it from a traffic generator, the better the benefit from this venue. Having said that, we don't have a significant event calendar to announce of a traditional sense, meaning the entertainment that you're asking about, I would imagine. So we don't have a calendar yet to announce that would be of any significance. But hopefully down the road in the not-too-distant future, we'll be able to do that.
Cool. All right. Thanks, guys.
Your next question comes from Adam Alexander from Goldman Sachs. Please ask your question.
Oh, good morning. John, you made a couple of comments in your presentation that margins at your properties are still below expectations. So coming in at the low 20s, I'm just wondering where you're targeting sort of longer term and when, sort of what year you expect the full run rate to hit, particularly at the start. And then secondly, just on your outlook comments, the ex-VIP revenue growth of 2.4% seems to be a bit of a slowdown. I'm just wondering where that the major weakness is and whether or not, you know, the timing of the event centre opening, we'll expect that to pick up as we go through this half.
Well, I think if you look at this, I'll deal with your the revenue growth question first, the 2.4% you referenced. I think historically when you look at this business, when you see significant investment, there's a significant uplift, and then the business starts to plateau. So any of these facilities require continued investment to keep the momentum on a significant upward trajectory. So having said that, we still see opportunities on the slot side to help continue some of that upward trajectory by reinventing our slot programs that I talked about previously. So we're going to try to push that 2.5% growth you referenced to a much higher percentage by doing better, of course, in our slot business and expanding the opportunities on the table game side as well by reinventing our program. So I think we'll have some good success in that area, but you're going to see most of that improvement happen in 14. I think with respect to the margin, I think you're asking whether we've achieved a target or if there's a particular target that I'm shooting for. I guess the short answer to that is no. No on the target. I tend to shy away from trying to shoot for a target. I think what we've been looking for is reinventing how we do business and continuing to offer or improve the guest service and guest experience. So when you look at some of the optimization that's coming out that we've been talking about on the call, it's really not the customer-facing type layer of management that's really the layer that's being removed from the operation, if you will, is that layer of management that is not customer-facing. So I think when you look at the margin, it will improve significantly by virtue of the dollars we're talking about, but we don't have a target that we're aiming for per se. I think it just continues to evolve as we get better at what we do and make sure we leverage the technology that's out there, whether it be the MTGMs, whether it be the internet. You know, there's a lot of efficiency opportunities there that we're very focused on, and without necessarily having a target.
Adam, maybe I can just give you a little bit more flavor on the revenue numbers. It's obviously a short period that we're reporting, so 7 weeks. So the win rate, particularly in the private gaming rooms and the main game floor, impacts on the revenue a little bit. But if you look at the Star versus Queensland ex-VIP, we are still seeing decent growth at the Star in the same pattern as in the first half. So we're not particularly alarmed at what we're seeing. And Queensland is, you know, at excluding VIP, going backwards. Still going backwards. Not at a huge rate, but it's going backwards. So it's a bit early to, you know, to be too concerned about the momentum having changed. It's only 7 weeks.
I think it probably is worth mentioning at this point, too, in Queensland, the slot product is not at the level that we would like it to be. There's been some challenges here from a regulatory environment in terms of what the product offering can be. We've had some great conversations with the Attorney General in particular. They're very open to allowing us to bring in a product that meets the Australian levels of security that they're looking for on the game product. But I think by allowing us to bring in a better product and move into a Tito environment, we would definitely expect to see an uplift in our slot performance, both in terms of efficiency because we move out of the coin, and in terms of revenue uplift because of the upgraded product and the additional amounts that can be played on those machines.
Great, thanks, John. I was just on the slot product in Jupiter's. It seems like the rest of the Queensland market has been relatively resilient. Do you just put it down to your product on the floor that you're dropping share? And when do you expect that will stabilise before you can spend money on the property?
Well, I think the upgrade of the product and the upgrade to Tito will have an impact on that. I think what we're also seeing is customers that are frequenting the facility on the New South Wales border, as opposed to coming to ours, just because of the antiquated product and the fact that they would, you know, prefer to play with currency as opposed to coin. So we hope to migrate that business back to Jupiter's and of course Brisbane as well by doing what we're chatting about here. And again, because of lead times, that wouldn't impact this financial year. That's going to be a 14 and out. So we hope to have that product on the floor starting in the end of this financial year and substantially completed by probably by the end of the calendar year.
Great, thank you.
The next question comes from Mark Wilson from Deutsche Bank. Please ask your question.
Thanks very much. John, I was just wondering if you could elaborate on the cost optimization program. Just, you know, step us through where, you know, what actually drove that increase from 30 mil to 60 mil, where the additional savings are coming from. And, you know, it is, you have mentioned that it's primarily labour and not customer facing. So can we assume that it's all middle management?
I think a significant amount is, but I think the other opportunity there was for us to get better at how we manage our hours of operation. And I think that's normal given the opening of a property where you have a tendency to over-operate and overstaff, not being familiar with the demand that we're going to experience. So once you've been able to operate for a period of time in that market, you can then gauge that demand and adjust your hours of operation accordingly. So that's a type of savings that doesn't necessarily result in a redundancy cost. It just results in a labor savings through reduced labor hours. So it's really a combination of removing layers of management to get more efficient, in addition to refining our hours of operation. And like I mentioned in table games, for instance, we might have had opportunities where we had bet spreads where, say, we had too many tables open of a particular type during certain hours of the day. So it's just a matter of refining that to make sure that the supply meets the demand. And I think the combination of those two are what are getting us to the significant savings going forward. And it'll be, you know, 100% flow through on that number.
Right. So to sort of step back 6 months ago, you know, is it essentially, you know, 50% in both of those categories where we're seeing the uplift? Is it more a reaction to some of the more subdued revenue growth?
No, I think it's if the revenue growth was significantly different in a more positive way, you would still address it the way we did. When I say that, I'm assuming the hours of operation issue would have been the same even with a different, you know, revenue profile. But when you look at what we did, it would be something that you would want to do in any operating environment, whether slow or fast in terms of growth. So it's just something that made sense to do. We're just reinventing the business. And I think you heard me say in the past, one of the things we don't want to do going forward is be complacent. So we're always going to reevaluate how we operate. And you're not going to see complacency happening in any of our properties.
Thanks very much.
Question comes from Nick Berry from Nomura. Please ask your question.
Hi, good morning, guys. Thanks. Just had a question on the Brisbane integrated resort development that we're potentially looking at. I sort of look at it and say, if I have a look at the catchment of Sydney versus the catchment of Brisbane, the catchment of Brisbane is a fraction of Sydney. Yet if you're looking at doing that sort of development, it's difficult to see how the capex profile could be, you know, too dissimilar to the type of money that you spend in Sydney. So I was just hoping to explore what gives you confidence that you could get returns on that sort of capex profile when you're looking at a catchment a fraction of the size that of Sydney.
Well, I think there's other markets you can point to as an example other than Sydney here in Australia that would give you some some good visibility on that. Having said that, we would be very prudent about how we would spend that those dollars. I think it's something that through proper planning and design, you can get something that looks like a $2 billion spend that actually costs $700 million. So that's anyone can spend an unlimited budget. The challenge is to be very disciplined about your capital expenditure approach to making sure that the returns are sufficient for our shareholders. So that's going to be the goal. I don't necessarily look at it as a challenge. It just goes without saying that that's what we should be doing. So I'm very, very comfortable and confident that we could build something that would be significant in scale at a price that would return a significant, would have significant returns. We're very comfortable with that. We're very comfortable with the market sizes there that would allow us to do that. But again, especially when you look at other markets here as an example.
When you assess the market size for looking at a new product like that, what do you take into account in terms of sort of total potential spend and competing gaming product and that sort of stuff? Could you just talk us through that?
Well, I think you can look at other markets, like I mentioned, that have similar size and similar demographics, so they exist. That's one metric or one way you can look at it. Clearly, just looking at the size of the population here and looking at the demographics of this market, you can't necessarily look at the Treasury in its current operating environment and say that's the size of the market. I mean, there's a reason why the revenue hasn't grown year over year for the last several years, and it's just because of capacity constraints. I know I've personally been involved in markets like that before. And when you build a brand new facility that has all the amenities to help expand the attractiveness of that offering, you'll see a significant return on that if there's a prudent spend. So right now, we don't have any, call it non-gaming amenities in that building to attract or broaden the appeal of that building. So by broadening the appeal, you will expand the visitation of that facility and therefore expand the revenue and returns. So that's why the growth just isn't there, and that's why we're extremely excited about building, you know, a brand new facility that would have all the amenities, if you will, to broaden the attraction and appeal of the building.
Thanks, John. And final question from me. I just wanted to explore the market share loss in slots in Sydney a bit more, just to get your view on whether you think the clubs are investing above the line any more than they have previously, clubs, pubs and hotels. And then also within that context, with the cost savings that you've flagged, how much of that do you think you can hold on to? Do you think you will need to invest above the line more too? And probably then also the split between the properties on where you expect those cost savings to come through?
Well, I think Matt already mentioned that we're not in a position where we want to break down where the savings are going to flow through between the various properties. I mean, the headline, of course, is just the magnitude of the savings as opposed to where they're going to take place. And with respect to the market share, given my short period of time here, I'm not as familiar with some of those, so I'm going to turn it over to Matt, let him talk about that.
Yeah, just if you turn to page number 8, you see that the market share for EGM, which is the only sort of reliable number that we can get from the New South Wales authorities, the market share in EGMs actually has gone up from 8% last year to 8.4% this year. Now, the major driver of that for us has been the performance of the multi-terminal games. But those multi-terminal games are also included in the pubs and clubs. So it's a like-for-like comparison. Now, you know, we look at that number and say, well, you know, MTGMs have done terrific, and we continue to see a lot of potential with continued good innovation and continued exciting product coming through. So we're excited about that. But we also look at the slots number and saying, well, slots has essentially gone static. You know, we've had 3 years of basically double-digit growth year after year, and now we've gone flat. So obviously, this being the most attractive product for us from a margin point of view, we want to reinvigorate the growth and go back on the trajectory. And you look at the Sydney slots market, it is gigantic. You know, we have because we have less than 10% share of the slots market. And so we're excited about the potential that we can reach if we have the appropriate marketing program, the appropriate offer. Just on the cost savings, you know, the reluctance to tell you where exactly it's going to come from just has to do with the fact we made the first set of announcements on Monday. The various areas are being spoken to. As John said, it goes through the whole company, but I don't want to be specific. So, you know, so people find out through this conference call rather than, you know, having been spoken to directly before we touch those areas. But I think next time around when we talk, we can be quite explicit about where all the cost savings came from. Thank you.
Sure, thanks. So just one bonus question. Federal election this year, do you think that's likely, or what sort of impact would you expect that to have on main gaming floor revenue trends?
I'm a political neophyte in this market. I don't know anything about it, to be honest with you, but my general thought would be zero impact.
Look, you know my view on this business is it's very much a confidence-driven business. And so depending on how the election campaign goes and whether there's a sense that it instills confidence rather than continues with the sort of sideways moves in many ways, that's going to be good for us. Other than that, you know, I don't see any impact on us.
Great. Thanks, guys.
Your next question comes from Matt Ryan from JP Morgan. Please ask your question.
Hey guys, just focusing on the slots in New South Wales, I know we've talked about it a lot, but can you just pinpoint exactly what it is about your loyalty program that you think you're losing share from?
Well, you know, at the end of the day, you always have to come back to the fact that there's, call it 98,000 slot machines in New South Wales. We only have 1,500 of them. But there's a tremendous demand for slot play, and we just need to capture more of that. So there's people that are visiting our property currently that we're not getting all of their play, and there's people that are not coming. So our current marketing program, if you will, has no baked-in intrinsic value other than access to a club if you're a member. So going forward, you'll see more baked-in intrinsic value by being a member beyond just having access to a club. So that's one. Two, you'll see much more aspirational approaches to driving slot play, meaning that every time you reach a particular plateau, you're entitled to something. That's why I kind of relate it to an airline. But even an airline company in their programs, which are extremely aspirational, they top out. And what we're designing is a program that won't top out. So continued visitation here at our properties will be continually rewarded. I think the other thing that we are going to do, I think that the other thing we will be doing, is looking at our customers echo-wide as opposed to property-specific. So we're going to be marketing to our customers as an echo customer, meaning that we're going to encourage them to play at all of our properties as opposed to just one, and in some cases, compete between the properties for that same customer. So that competitive tension that we had, we're going to remove that to the extent it drove down a margin and replace that with a philosophy that we're all in the same team and we're just trying to increase the amount of visitation regardless of the property of play. I mean, customers at the end of the day vote with their feet. We just want to make sure that they walk in the right property.
Let me just add a couple of thoughts on that one. You know, 3 years ago, we implemented the casino management system that came with a new loyalty system. We were the first ones to market in slots with free play. We had, you know, games in the games. We had a whole bunch of innovations that were effective at driving the slots share for 3 years. What we have seen and observed over the last 12 months, in particular over the last 6 months, that everybody else in the market, particularly the large clubs, have caught up. So what used to be unique to us is now no longer unique. In terms of the physical presentation of the particular premium areas, a lot of the clubs have invested as well. So we need to come up with something that is unique again, and that's what we're working on, because simply the competitive advantage that we had been eroded through over the years. And you saw that when we looked at the effectiveness of our marketing offers, where, you know, we we used to offer X dollars in free play and got a certain customer reaction, and we saw less and less response to the same offer. So therefore, you know, if it's not working, we need to try something else.
I think any marketing program that's effective long term goes through various iterations, and what we're looking at is no different. So, and whatever we come up with will continue to evolve so it doesn't get stagnant. Just part of this whole lack of complacency push going forward, whether it's with efficiencies or whether it's with program designs, we want to keep everything new and fresh going forward.
And in terms of timing, I mean, you mentioned April before as the sort of month that you could get this sort of thing rolled out. I assume it's going to take a little while longer than that to actually get feet in the door. So should we be looking at sort of first half 14 before we start seeing a reversal of the trend?
I think these new programs always take a period of time to get traction in the marketplace. So, you know, that might even be aggressive, although something that we would want to see happen. You know, more realistically, it could take longer to get traction when you're rolling out a brand new program. But you know, the most important takeaway is that we are doing something different, because obviously, to continue to do the same, you're going to get the same result. So we are targeting the April timeframe to have that roll out, and beyond that, you will always see us evolving that program, continuing to add benefits. And as you add benefits to the program, it's going to continue to broaden the appeal and therefore broaden the base of customer and the frequency of visitation. So although I would like to obviously see immediate results happen in the first part, I think it's more realistic to assume that it takes a little bit of time to get some traction.
Okay. And obviously another pretty strong period of turnover growth within VIP. Can you just give us an idea if your commission rates are flat, what sort of margins you'd be making on that business?
Well, I'll let I know Matt touched base on that question before, but I'll let him elaborate on a little bit more.
Are we looking at about 15%?
Okay, thank you.
And your next question comes from Larry Gandler from Credit Suisse. Please ask your question.
Hi guys, two questions. First on Barangaroo. Can you tell us where you guys slot in the formal unsolicited proposal process? Do you put in submissions? And if you do put in submissions, is your position going to be that Barangaroo should not be built or that Echo should be the ones who build Barangaroo? That's the first question. My second question is on the $60 million cost-out program. Do you guys, in your modeling, make a revenue impact assumption associated with the cost out? And if so, sort of magnitude, don't get too specific, as you probably won't, and what sort of areas? Is it non-gaming, gaming?
Well, we'll deal with the cost out issue first. There would be zero revenue impact. Again, when you're looking at hours of operation and you're refining those, what you're doing is eliminating the hours you're open, whether it be in a restaurant or on a blackjack table, you're eliminating the hours that you're open that you have no activity. So those types of changes have zero impact, and all of the changes we're making are like that, meaning that they would have no impact whatsoever. I think when you look at the Barangaroo issue, we have, of course, clearly stated in the past that as a project, we're very much supportive of that. I mean, any investment that can take place in the city, we're very supportive of. We like the idea of development, additional development, especially of the kind that's being discussed for that site. Our whole comment in that area has been with a second license. So it's not something that we're interested in having another location. We think there should be one license and one location in Sydney, which is consistent with the balance of the country and consistent with the historical approach of how gaming has been looked at in Australia.
And in terms of the formal process, when do you put in submissions, and when does that occur?
I'm not saying a process. I'm not aware of a process that's going to take place there. I mean, the Barangaroo project that was approved, as I'm sure you're aware, consists of office towers and a potential hotel. but it's not something we're bidding on.
No, I know that, but Crown has an unsolicited proposal in with the New South Wales government, and I imagine at some point the New South Wales government would seek submissions with regards to that proposal.
Larry, it's Matt here. We are familiar with the process and the Mario process, obviously, but we'd rather continue our engagement with the government, directly with the government, than rather than doing it through analysts and the media.
Okay. Get it. Thanks.
Your next question comes from Michael Goldsman from Citi. Please ask your question.
Hi, guys, again. Can you just quickly clarify whether the management reductions in your cost-saving program include table supervisors?
I think it's safe to assume that without getting specific on terms of job titles or responsibilities, that these savings are across the board in terms of non-gaming, gaming, and throughout all of our properties.
Okay, sure. And the other thing is the metric you referenced before, the revenue per table open hour, you've seen good improvement at both the Star and Queensland, but how much of it, just out of interest, is due to you shifting tables to the premium gaming rooms?
I don't think it has anything to do with that. And if there was anything there, it would be on a very de minimis level. And, of course, these are numbers that are reflective of what happened in the first half as opposed to changes that we've made to date and what impact they will have going forward.
Yeah. Excellent. Thank you.
And your next question comes from Mark Bryan from Merrill Lynch. Please ask your question.
Yeah, hi Matt, hi John, morning. If these have gone before, apologies, I got cut out for a short while. But Matt, I just wanted to ask you about the seasonality of the business as you start to move towards more of a steady state. If we look, I think, at the split of consensus numbers the market has, it's sort of roughly 50-50 on EBITDA. Do you think that's reasonable given that perhaps what we've learned today is that there's maybe a slightly slower top line coming through in the second half, but obviously, as you've alluded to, perhaps slightly deeper cost out.
Look, 50-50 is not a bad estimate. If you look at the cyclicality of our business, now that the VIP business is making and the premium end of the business is becoming a larger part of our operation, Chinese New Year, Thai New Year, the events in the second half have become quite important. So the historical bias towards the first half, we don't see that anymore.
Okay, that's clear. Thank you. And just if I may, sorry to labour on the slots area and staff, so you can see from the call it's of interest to us. Notwithstanding your comments, Matt, around market share, I mean, it does feel certainly stats we're seeing that in November, December, you did slip a bit. You also used the phrase confidence. Are you able to give us any colour on what it's done in the last 6-7 weeks at all?
Almost identical to the third quarter.
Almost identical to the third quarter. Okay.
To the second quarter. So in terms of growth.
So that at that lower, at that sort of less attractive level from what you reported in October. Okay, that's clear. All right, thanks a lot.
And your next question comes from Tony Skinner from Selector Funds Management. Please ask your question.
Yeah, hi. Thanks very much for taking the question. Look, it's perhaps a bigger question, if you like, rather than into the specifics of things. But since the CapEx program started at the Star, $800 million or so of CapEx has been spent. I'm just trying to get some metrics. I understand that, John, that you don't particularly want to stick to any certain targets, and that's fine. However, what is the metric that investors should look at in terms of return on capital employed or an EBITDA margin, something? Because when the investment was first started, as investors, we were told, $200 million in 2009 was a starting point. We should get to $340 million by 2014. Obviously, there's been management changes. There's been changes across the board. But what should we as investors look for as some guiding light, if you wish?
I think, from my perspective, I would not want to be in a position where I'm recommending to our board that we do something with a return less than 15%. I mean, that wouldn't make any sense to me to even make that recommendation. So I think anything that we would consider doing going forward, whether it be in Brisbane or anywhere else, would have, you know, a minimum return of that level before I would even consider recommending that.
That's fine. However, with the capital has been spent, the question I've got now is, I know that the capital needed to be spent in order to refurbish the Star. The question I've got now is are you actually going to get the return that you expect on the Star? Well, it doesn't appear to be the case.
I think when you look at the previously communicated expectations, we're still comfortable with that going into 14.
Being $340 million worth of EBITDA?
That's correct.
Okay, thank you.
Guys, we're coming up to the hour. I think we'll have to cut off the questions. I realize it's a big reporting day. Just want to thank you for your time and look forward to talking to all of you over the next few days as we meet investors and talk to you analysts individually. So thanks for your time.
Thank you very much, everyone. Take care.
Ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for participating. You may all disconnect.